Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to another live edition of Radio X here on Micro 1650 AM and worldwide at micro1650am.com. I am your host, Jimmy X. Thank you for joining me this afternoon. I have a great program for you, I promise you. We're going to be talking about the legislation that just won't go away. What is it? Well, it's the hate crimes legislation. And every time that one of these bills has been defeated in the past, it just simply gets repackaged, renamed, reintroduced, and sent right back to Congress, as is the case right now. As we speak, the latest version of the hate crimes bill, S-909, is pending before the Senate after passing the House just a few weeks ago. My guest on today's broadcast is Reverend Ted Pike. He's one of the most outspoken critics of hate crime laws, and he has been very busy as of late, understandably so, getting the word out on many radio talk shows, and he's been gracious enough to join us this afternoon to discuss hate crimes legislation. So good afternoon, Reverend Pike, and thank you for coming on the program today.
Well, thanks for having me, Jimmy.
Well, Reverend, for the sake of those who may not be familiar with just who is Reverend Pike and what you're up to, how about a little background information to start, particularly about the National Prayer Network and your involvement in these hate crime activities?
Yes, I come from a real Christian conservative family. My parents were leaders of a Christian conservative movement clear back in the late 1940s here in the Pacific Northwest. And we have been attempting through many years to return the country to Christian conservative values. My parents had a radio program here in Portland, Oregon, back in the 1960s, and needless to say, they were delighted when Ronald Reagan was finally elected to the White House, ending about a half century of liberal dominance of the presidency. At that time, my father was very concerned that the great National Day of Prayer, which was established by President then General Washington in 1775 in the depths of crisis in fighting the Revolutionary War against the British, he proclaimed a National Day of Fasting and Prayer for America. And that was observed annually for more than a century, but in modern times, in the last 50 years or so, it fell into forgetfulness, a national forgetfulness of that great institution. And he was concerned in about 1980, when the president was elected, to see if he could persuade President Reagan to restore the National Day of Prayer. In short, we flew an old airplane, an old 1939 Palenka monoplane, all around America. In fact, we came up almost to Buffalo, New York, in a circle around the country. We had a huge aerial banner that said "Pray for America" trailing behind. We had a rock concert, a sound system blasting out through the belly saying "Pray for America." We flew all around America in the summer of 1980 and gathering petitions. This came to the attention of President Reagan, who did invite my father to the White House for a special ceremony with other Christian conservative leaders to witness the signing of the National Day of Prayer. Well, out of that, we formed what was called the National Prayer Network, out of our many contacts. And since then, we have been a Christian conservative watchdog group, particularly focusing on the threat of hate crimes legislation in the Western Hemisphere. Over the last 30 years, hate laws, federal hate crimes laws, have proliferated in Canada, Europe, Australia, and basically their fruits are very evil, very bitter. They always persecute Christians, persecute people on the political right, and always take away free speech. And so we have had a website called truthtellers.org on the internet, and there we post probably several good articles a week, keeping people abreast of the threat of hate crimes legislation, particularly in our Congress now. And we also have videos and books and other educational resources.
Now, Ted, honestly, what exactly is the definition of a hate crime?
Well, the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith is the architect of hate crimes legislation in the Western world, and they have basically, back in your own state, back in 1988, they held a national hate crimes, a model anti-hate crimes law competition, which was open to law students in America. And the prize-winning proposal by Joseph Ribicoff was given, he was given first prize at Hofstra University in New York in a big big gathering there. And basically what Ribicoff wanted to do was to make it illegal to criticize homosexuality under hate laws. And he said that if any Christian conservative leader were to show a film that was critical of homosexuality, they should be indicted and jailed. And also, if any of perhaps thousands of members of that organization remained members and loyal to that organization, they also should be criminalized. And ADL basically set up itself as the architect, as in the driver's seat of not only federal but local police and attorney generals' definitions of what is a hate crime. Basically, if you go to ADL's website, which is adl.org, they will very expansively explain to everyone how they have saddled 45 U.S. states with hate crimes laws. And they are very proud they have made these definitions. Now, the definition of a hate crime, according to the ADL, differs in America from what it does in Canada. In Canada, in 1971, ADL persuaded Ottawa, Parliament in Ottawa, to enact its federal hate crimes law for Canada. And basically, up there, under Section 319 of the Canadian hate law, all you have to do to commit a hate crime is to say something in public which holds federally protected groups, especially Muslims, Jews, and homosexuals, up to hatred or contempt. So if you are on the radio in Canada and you are a pastor and you say that God considers homosexuality to be an abomination and a perversion and so on, that right there will land you a minimum $5,000 fine, because you have held up homosexuals to quote-unquote hatred and contempt. And if indeed, in fact, even if you just say that homosexuals have a higher rate of AIDS, then that is considered a hate crime in Canada, subject to the same harsh fines and imprisonment if you continue to make those statements. So in Canada, all you have to do to commit a hate crime is to verbally criticize specially protected groups or their members. Now, here in the United States, ADL has a different definition of hate crimes. That is, if you are bias motivated, and that bias motivation propels you into some kind of a crime, whether a property crime or a physical crime, then that combination of bias motivation plus violation of the law equals a hate crime. You see, up in Canada, they don't have the protections of the First Amendment, guarantee of free speech. Down here, we do, and therefore ADL cannot take away our free speech as aggressively, as boldly as they do in Canada. They have to kind of combine, make a compromise between bias motivation on one hand and commission of a crime on the other. But on the other hand, when the ADL really wants to bite down and make an indictment for a hate crime, they really don't care about this kind of thing. For example, in 2004, there were 11 Christians who were preaching and singing a song, "Blessed be the name of the Lord," during a huge homosexual festival in Philadelphia. And Lynn Abraham, who is the district attorney of Philadelphia and a national executive board member of ADL, had those Christians arrested, threw them in the slammer for 21 hours, arrested them for 7 different violations, including violation of the Pennsylvania ADL hate law. So the total fines would have amounted to $90,000. The total jail time would have amounted to 46 years in prison for each one of those 11 Christians. And unfortunately, it was thrown out three months later in a higher court. But here you see how aggressive ADL lackeys like Lynn Abraham are. If they really want to indict Christians, go after right-wingers and so on, they're not going to be worrying about the fine points of these distinctions and definitions of what a hate crime really is. That's why it's so important not to let the hate crime genie get out of its bottle, because its legislation is just made to be broadened and extended by federal judges, by district judges, liberal judges, away from just a law supposedly meant to punish violent hate crimes, instead into a broad speech crime or thought crime law.
And you're not kidding about Canada. They have basically what amounts to a one-man army up there in this attorney, Richard Warman.
Yes.
You're familiar with him.
Yes, I am.
He's actually been accused of going out and actually getting people involved in, say, chat rooms and that, and getting them to use inflammatory language. Then he turns around and blows them in to the Canadian Human Rights Council.
Yeah, an agent provocateur.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, Ted, let me ask you, why would we need such laws in the first place? I mean, don't we have sufficient laws on the books now that address, say, assault, murder, and other criminal activity? Why do we need to single people out?
There is no need for any kind of federal or local hate crimes laws. In fact, even if we do accept the FBI statistics of about 7,500 hate crimes a year, which is a very doubtful number, nevertheless, that's only 1/20 of 1% of the actual 13 million crimes, which are actual crimes, which are reported to the FBI every year. So this is a bogey. There is no epidemic of hate in America that's tearing whole communities apart and all that ADL rhetoric. The ADL basically wants to get in control. It wants to establish its own definitions, its own legal bias-oriented anti-justice system in America. It wants to take away free speech. It wants to end any criticism of matters Jewish or Israel on the internet. It's basically very power hungry. ADL is a very aggressive Jewish organization, composed not of all Jews, but of a minority of very very supremacist anti-Christian types of Jews, coming out of B'nai B'rith International, which is a huge Jewish religious educational and fraternal organization with presences in 56 nations of the world.
And I think the part that bothers me more than anything is how these actually are written. If you check into them, you'll find that there's a term in there that says these acts against a person, real or imagined.
Yeah.
That's the key. I mean, how can you imagine it? I mean, how can someone be prosecuted for someone else's what? Imagination? I mean, so anything can be labeled as a hate crime, right?
Well, that's right. The ADL phrase is real or actual gender identity. According, so if you let's say a man attempts to rape a quote unquote woman, and he perceives her as a woman, she turns out to be actually a transvestite, nevertheless, he will be indicted under this federal hate law now in Congress. He could spend 10 years or more in prison, even though he got mixed up on the gender. And that's it doesn't matter whether his perceptions were real or they were perceived or whatever. This legislation basically says that any kind of bias motivation is very, very, very bad. And that's why these laws, hate laws in the states and on the federal government, raise the penalty three levels, which is sometimes even more than a triple penalty. The whole message of ADL is it's very, very bad to be prejudiced against groups like homosexuals, Muslims, Jews, etc. Prejudice is the big, big evil that society should avoid at all costs. Certainly any prejudice against Jews, any suspicion of Muslims, and so on, the ADL will come after people in the hate crimes tribunal courts.
And that's, I think, what we're going to end up seeing if one of these laws passes federal muster, is that you're going to see something similar as to what they have in Canada, which is basically a tribunal that investigates every one of these cases. And by the way, in Canada, the way I understand it, has nearly a 100% conviction rate.
It is 100%.
I think one person got off.
What this federal hate bill says is, oh no, we don't want to end free speech. We just want to end violent hate crimes in the states, and we just want to give the federal government the prerogative as a kind of a backstop there to intervene when the states can't or won't punish violent hate crimes in the states. Well, that's exactly the argument they gave to the Canadians in 1971. They said, oh no, we'll never end free speech in Canada. Nobody will ever be prosecuted for speech by itself, but we need to end violent hate crimes out of the provinces. We need to end hate speech, which incites acts of violence. Well, it sounded good to the naive members of Parliament, as it does also sound good to naive members of our U.S. Congress right now. But what happened in Canada was, after the bill was passed, then as soon as a few cases emerged, then those cases, of course, went before federal judges, magistrates in the provinces, and so on, who were all liberals, and they then made decisions from the bench. They adjudicated, saying, "Oh no, we can't just punish people who commit violent hate crimes against gays. We have to punish those who intimidate them and make them feel diminished and humiliated for being what they are." And so very quickly, it wasn't just violent hate crimes that the law went after. It went against what is called verbal violence, cutting words, especially words out of the Bible, Leviticus and Romans, which describe homosexuality as a perversion and an abomination.
Well, you know what? The only thing, Reverend, I think that I wouldn't use the word naive in describing members of Congress or Parliament in Canada. I think that the people who are for this know doggone well what they're doing. That's how I feel about it.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a mix, because ADL was very successful in coming into the U.S. states after 1990. Yet in 1990, ADL persuaded Congress to pass its Hate Crime Statistic Act of 1990, and that gave the ADL the right to basically become the lawgiver and the teacher and educator on hate crimes everywhere in the U.S. Justice Department, the FBI, and all the way down to the local police precinct. And during that period, ADL went out, and they did convince huge numbers of legislators on the state level. I believe a good deal of those state reps and senators were naive, thinking, well, this is a win-win bill. Everybody's against hate. I'll vote for an anti-hate law. And on the other hand, I think the Democrats in Congress right now are kind of a different breed, because we've defeated, our National Prayer Network has been important and instrumental in helping defeat a federal hate crimes law five times since it was first introduced in 1998. And so these Democrats on Capitol Hill are very, very savvy about what's in the hate bill and arguments against it, and they are very hardened. They have clearly are involved in a conspiracy to close their ears and go ahead and pass the hate bill.
Well, it sounds like every other liberal policy, which is, I guess it sounds good on paper, but, you know, when it's actually implemented, doesn't really do anything. That's my take. But the problem, I think, that comes down to what I've heard, what very little I've heard about any of these hate crime bills, is that they keep holding up one person in particular as like the poster child for all of this. It's like the main reason we have to have it passed, and that would be Matthew Shepard.
Sure.
And it's talked about, though, as though this is some sort of epidemic.
Yes.
But there are no facts or figures to suggest that there is an epidemic of people going around simply picking on homosexuals.
No.
Because they're homosexual. There's just no basis for that assertion.
Actually, the reported crimes of homosexuals against homosexuals is quite staggering. You have these bitter love feuds and quarrels between homosexuals, which often end in violence. And as I say, the incidence of homosexuals committing hate crimes against homosexuals vastly outnumbers any incidence of white Christians attacking a homosexual or bashing him.
Well, isn't that going to be a problem? I mean, how are you going to be able to charge a homosexual with, you know, I mean, that you're going to run into a little problem, I would think, in that case, wouldn't you?
Well, the whole system.
Sorry, but
the whole hate crimes ideology is so rife with inconsistencies and vagaries. It's extremely vague, extremely subjective and unclear what these terms mean. What does the gender identity mean? What does sexual orientation mean? And so on. In fact, right now we are in the midst of a tremendous controversy in Congress and in the country over the term sexual orientation. Several weeks ago, in the House Judiciary Markup hearing, a representative, Steve King, at the very end of his hearing, he delivered a bombshell of an amendment. He said, "Well, if we are going to protect homosexuals under sexual orientation," he said to the Democrats, "then the very least we should do is define sexual orientation, and we should also make it crystal clear that we are not going to be protecting the pedophiles under the category of sexual orientation." And the Democrats all rejected that amendment. And in fact, Tammy Baldwin, who's a lesbian member of the House Judiciary Democrat contingency, she said, "Well, if we did this, it would unravel the whole bill. It would gut the whole bill." And the reason it would gut it is because, you see, what the liberals want to do is they want to create this pseudo class of sexual orientation, which will uniformly protect all forms of sexual deviancy. And there's something like 547 types of sexual deviancy listed by the American Psychological Association.
All right, well, Reverend, we have to take a break here at the bottom of the hour. My guest, Reverend Ted Pike, truthtellers.org. We're back with more in the second half of Radio X in just 3 minutes. Stay tuned, folks.